This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
The leaders of France, Germany, and Italy arrive in Ukraine as Kyiv pleads for more arms. Plus, the EU inks an energy deal with Israel and Egypt in the search for alternatives to Russian gas.
This is the first time Israel is exporting gas to Europe, obviously a major customer, and it will help Egypt become basically this regional hub for gas.
And demand for vacant land soars near America's ports. It's Thursday, June 16th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The leaders of France, Germany, and Italy arrived in Ukraine today for talks with President Volodymyr Zelensky. The leaders' visit is being closely watched in Ukraine and in capitals across Europe, where divisions have begun to emerge over how to bring the nearly four-month conflict to an end. Kyiv has said any territorial concessions to Moscow are off the table, and only a major transfer of weapons and ammunition will hold advancing Russian forces at bay. However, France and Germany see diplomacy as the only way to ultimately resolve the conflict. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol is set to hold its third hearing today, with the panel expected to focus on a pressure campaign against former Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the 2020 election. Among those expected to testify is Greg Jacob, Pence's chief counsel. WSJ Congress reporter Siobhan Hughes has more.
We're also likely to delve into the role played by another lawyer named John Eastman, who is the architect of a strategy to give the presidency to Donald Trump by having Mike Pence reject the votes from seven different states where some alternate or fake electors had been submitted to the U.S. government.
Abbott Laboratories halted production at its biggest baby formula plant in the U.S. in Sturgis, Michigan on Wednesday after recent thunderstorms flooded part of the plant. Despite that, the company said it has sufficient supply of Elicare and most of its specialty and metabolic formulas to meet customer needs. Abbott said it had informed the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and it will conduct tests to ensure the plant is safe to resume production. A rapid rise in American fuel exports is helping push gasoline prices to a record $5 a gallon and pressuring U.S. natural gas prices. Market intelligence firm Kepler reports that seaborne shipments of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel from the U.S. Gulf Coast averaged 32% higher in March and April compared to the same time last year, while the Energy Information Association says natural gas exports to Mexico and Canada hit records in March. WSJ Commodities reporter Joe Wallace.
Companies and commodity traders have been shipping much more oil and gas overseas because they've been able to earn more money from doing that than from selling the fuels in the US itself. And the effect of this has been to pull stockpiles of fuel even lower than they were already and push prices higher. Inventories of crude oil and petroleum products are at the lowest level since 2008.
And we are exclusively reporting that Elon Musk is expected to confirm his desire to own Twitter when he speaks to the social media company's employees today, according to a person familiar with the matter. The billionaire Tesla CEO is slated to answer pre-submitted employee questions for roughly an hour at a virtual all-hands meeting. A major real estate hunt is underway across the U.S. as logistics companies and port operators try to locate land near container terminals. Faced with persistently long delays in emptying, reloading, and shipping out those containers, These businesses are having to get creative in the search for adequate storage facilities. WSJ commercial real estate reporter Conrad Pootsier has been tracking this story, and he joins us now with more. Hey, Conrad.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what effect are these efforts to overcome shipping bottlenecks having on ports and the areas around them?
Well, one effect that this incredible shipping boom is having is just on land prices around ports, because essentially what's happening is that more and more containers are arriving at ports. Logistics companies, for a number of reasons, have gotten slower at moving these containers on to warehouses and other places. So they're basically just piling up on these ports. And for ports, that means that they're running out of space to store all these containers, and they essentially need facilities nearby to store these containers, and that creates demand for land. But the caveat here, of course, is there isn't that much land that actually meets these requirements, because there's a bunch of boxes that this has to tick, right? It has to be zoned for industrial use. It has to be zoned in a way that you can stack containers on top of each other. And then, and most importantly, you need to be able to get the containers from the port to these sites easily, meaning you have to be by a rail yard or by a big road. And there isn't that much land that meets these requirements, especially in cities like New York or New Jersey or Los Angeles. So finding these isn't actually that easy.
And operators that are looking for space are getting pretty creative, are they not?
Yeah. In some cases, they're actually looking to tear down existing buildings and warehouses to just turn them into container storage, which is crazy, right? Because buildings should be more valuable than just vacant land. But in some cases, actually, vacant land now is more valuable than existing buildings. There's one company called Chunker, which is a container storage business. They've reached a deal with the owners of a bunch of Sears department stores, which are now vacant near California ports, to essentially bring shipping containers to these Sears department stores, park them in their parking lots, and then unload them and use these empty stores as warehouses.
And Conrad, what we're seeing here, is it just a temporary trend or something that could herald more permanent changes?
Everyone I talk to thinks that this is a permanent phenomenon because the fundamental problem that we're dealing with here, right, an increase in shipping meeting this lack of land in these coastal cities, that problem isn't going away. I'm sure it's going to lead to a lot of tensions with locals who maybe don't want warehouses in their area. It might lead to a boom in land values, make some people very rich, but for sure, it's going to really impact what cities look like.
That was Wall Street Journal commercial real estate reporter Conrad Pootsier. Conrad, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, the European Union has just signed a gas deal to develop the Eastern Mediterranean's natural gas reserves. But can that actually solve the continent's energy problems? We'll have that story after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Yesterday, the European Union signed a gas supply deal with Israel and Egypt as the continent scrambles to secure alternatives to Russian energy. WSJ correspondent for Israel and the Palestinian territories, Dov Lieber, is in Tel Aviv, and he has the latest on what this deal could achieve, as well as the very real hurdles that still exist before it's likely to have much of an effect. Hi, Dov. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about how this deal signed yesterday will work and its potential significance.
Okay, so let's talk about the short term firstly. Israel already sends gas to Egypt, and Egypt already exports gas to Europe. Israel sends gas to Egypt via a pipeline, and that gets to Egypt's liquidation facilities. The gas is liquefied in Egypt and then shipped to Europe. So in the short term, it would basically mean Israel squeezing out as much as it can out of its pre-existing infrastructure. And whatever the extra surplus is, it can send that to Europe. Currently, we don't know, and no one has said on the record, exactly how much gas Israel can send to Europe in the short term. In the long term, it would mean building out or expanding Israel's infrastructure through new pipelines and also getting gas out of new reservoirs in order to increase the amount of gas that Israel can export.
And were this deal to, actually play out in the long term, what could the potential significance be for the players involved?
Okay, so for Europe, this isn't going to make up for the loss of Russian gas, not even close, but it's part of the EU's diversification efforts. They will get at least some of their gas from the Eastern Mediterranean rather than relying on one partner. But for Israel and Egypt, it actually has major significance for both countries. This is the first time Israel is exporting gas to Europe, obviously a major customer. Up until not too long ago, Israel itself was a importer of natural gas, and all the natural gas discoveries basically happened in the last decade or so. And it's basically turned around its whole energy image of an importer to now an exporter on the world stage, exporting to clients like the EU. And Egypt also has benefited from all these discoveries of natural gas in the Eastern Mediterranean. But because it has such a large population, it needs to reserve a lot of its own gas for its local market. But it has these liquefaction facilities that Israel doesn't have that allows it to be the exporter of the gas to Europe. So it will help Egypt become basically this regional hub for gas.
How much untapped potential energy resources are there in the Eastern Mediterranean?
That's a good question, actually. Estimates do vary on this, but one kind of low estimate is around 2 trillion cubic meters. For reference sake, last year the EU imported 155 billion cubic meters from Russia. So there's at least enough gas in the ground in the Eastern Mediterranean to keep the lights on and the gas ovens on in Europe for many decades. But not all of that is even close to being ready to being taken out of the ground. And to be honest, many people estimate that there could be a lot more gas there, but much of it is still yet untapped.
I mean, given that, Dov, why have so much of these resources remained untapped until now?
Well, firstly, the exploration for natural gas in the Eastern Mediterranean only began producing results up to about 2 decades ago, and slowly the major discoveries have started to come through. But at the same time, these discoveries of natural gas in the Eastern Mediterranean really happened at a time when the world was looking to transition away from fossil fuels, transition away from natural gas and towards more greener options to decarbonize. And the war in Ukraine has really kind of changed the equation in a way, including for the EU, where they're willing to overlook, at least in the short term, the desire to go green as soon as possible. And they're willing to build out, to continue exploration, for example, and to build out infrastructure a little more in order to keep the gas flowing for now. But they haven't really invested too much in this industry because it looked like energy was going in a very different direction.
That was WSJ correspondent for Israel and the Palestinian territories, Dov Lieber. Dov, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
And finally, starting next year, Apple and its Apple TV app will become the new global broadcast home for all Major League Soccer matches after the tech giant inked a 10-year, $2.5 billion deal with America's top men's soccer league this week. The MLS is now the most significant American sports league to move all of its games to streaming. And WSJ senior sports reporter Rachel Bachman says that on the heels of Amazon acquiring rights to show NFL, NBA, and WNBA games, more leagues are likely to give streaming services a serious look.
Increasingly, we're going to see them making a choice between traditional broadcasters, many of whom are spending huge, monstrous amounts to carry leagues like the NFL and NBA, and these streaming services, which might not pay as much as the broadcasters or cable companies, but they can offer more unconventional services like global deals, for instance. And of course, all tech companies are trying to expand their markets beyond, for instance, selling a piece of hardware or the traditional businesses that they've offered. And sports are quite a huge frontier.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.